This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains, now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
This is See How They Run, horse race coverage from the left. I'm D.D. Guttenplein, editor of The Nation magazine. On today's episode, I'll be talking with our national affairs correspondents, Joan Walsh and Jeet Thier, about the impact of Donald Trump's felony convictions. On Thursday, May 30th, a Manhattan jury found Trump guilty on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. Joan, maybe you could begin by reminding us what Trump was accused of and why this verdict matters.
Well, sure, Don, and thanks for having me. I mean, first and foremost, it was a case of business fraud and falsifying business records, and Alvin Bragg regularly brings cases like that. That's part of what the New York District Attorney is supposed to do. They're supposed to crack down on white-collar criminals. But he did add a kind of secret sauce, which was showing that turning what was, I guess, probably a misdemeanor into a felony by showing that he was falsifying those records to cover up something else. And something else was partially to hide from taxes, but it was also to commit basically campaign finance fraud, that these contributions or whatever we want to call them from Michael Cohen were designed to hide something before the 2016 election. And a lot of people criticized him for that, but he really, you know, he ran out a great case because, you know, his star witness was not Michael Cohen, who, you know, spent time in jail for lying and is not necessarily the most reliable figure, but it was David Kecker of the National Enquirer who completely testified that they were trying to hide Trump's various affairs in different ways to keep it from coming out before the election.
Okay, let's go back even further. Let's break it down a little bit. Trump had an affair, or at least a one-night stand, with Stormy Daniels, an adult film star. He didn't want that to be known, and he particularly didn't want that to be known after the Access Hollywood tapes came out and made his sexual behavior potentially a campaign issue in 2016. So he had his friend, David Pecker, at the National Enquirer, pursue the story under something that was called catch and kill. The theory of catch and kill is that the National Enquirer would pay sources for stories, but then would never publish those stories. That's the kill part of catch and kill. And in the case of Stormy Daniels, she wanted quite a lot of money for her story. And Michael Cohen put that money up and then asked to be reimbursed by Donald Trump. So one part of the criminal charge was that Trump claimed that this was a legal expense, the money he paid to Michael Cohen to reimburse him. So that's business fraud. And then the campaign fraud part is that this was done to keep this information from the voters and thus to prevent their having knowledge of facts that might have been material in making their decisions about an election. There needed to be some kind of connection between this business records crime, which is a misdemeanor, and something more serious in order for this to rise to the level of a felony.
And then they also, I think, did a good job showing that it was really to hide a campaign contribution, because what both David Pecker and Michael Cohen were doing was contributing money in a way that would protect Donald Trump from electoral consequences. And those things should have been considered campaign contributions. And the jury believed it. And, you know, I know that there are a lot of people, even including a few people that I actually trust, who thought this is really kind of speculative and out there. But this jury of 12 New Yorkers who were diverse and seemed to have different politics, they bought it. And so that was very interesting. A lot of people were afraid. And, you know, I watched people in the day before saying, oh, they're going to find the misdemeanors. Like, you've got Donald Trump signing a bunch of those checks, Michael Cohen. That's complete fraud. But, you know, you could argue that was just a misdemeanor. But they bought all 34 charges. So it was very impressive.
This is a very New York story in a lot of ways. And I was reminded a little bit about this real New York character, the late journalist Sidney Zion, who wrote a book called Markers, which is all about how everybody in New York is doing favors for each other, you know, at an elite level, people like Roy Cohn, and they get paid back by other favors. And so this catch and kill system by the National Enquirer is a giant blackmail scheme where they have all this, you know, dirty information on Trump and other politicians, which they decide to kill so that they can get other favors, maybe other stories or other benefits from the government. And on the felony issue, it's worth remembering, somebody had already gone to jail for this. That is, like, Michael Cohen. It's not a speculative thing that there's a crime here. There was a crime. And if Cohen is guilty, then, like, how can you say that the guy he's doing the favor for is not guilty?
And if I can jump in, I mean, remember, Donald Trump was individual one in the trial against Michael Cohen. And he was either, you know, directing or at minimum participating in the same scheme that sent Michael Cohen to prison. So, you know, when you look at it that way, it really shouldn't be shocking to us that this very New York jury said he's guilty. You know,
and yet I will confess, I let out quite a sigh of relief when the verdict came in. And I wonder whether one reason for that, and Ajit, this might be something that you would want to speak to, is that of all the accusations against Donald Trump, this was in some ways the biggest reach.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely the case that, and it's a little bit, I will say it is unfortunate that the sort of, you know, the weakest case against Trump is the one that went first. Although another way to look at it is if even the weakest case against Trump can end with 34 felony conviction, if he loses, you know, like the other cases are going to go forward, you know, Georgia and others will go forward. And those are more serious things. Those are the things that one thinks of when Trump, we think of, you know, why Trump is a criminal. That's the actual January 6th stuff, or it's the holding of documents after his being president, you know, like very serious high level crimes. So, yeah, I mean, I understand why people were skeptical. And I was pretty skeptical, too, just based on the reporting, except I think towards the end where the Trump's lawyers at the end were making increasingly desperate arguments. And the closing argument to me, like, was the one where I thought, like, OK, this could actually something could happen here, because the closing argument of Trump's lawyer, first of all, denied that he ever had sex with Stormy Daniels, which, like, seems like a wild thing to say. And he's also almost insulting to the jury, like you're daring them to, you know, like, believe something incredible to come to their conclusion. But also included threats to the jury, like saying that if Trump goes to jail, you know, like, there could be consequences. But I don't think you, like, threaten a jury like that unless you, like, are in pretty desperate straits.
As you said, this was in some ways the weakest case.
I do want to just step out here and say you and I and Alvin Bragg and G did not decide that this case would go first. Other cases could have gone first, except they had so much federal interference. Aileen Cannon, the judge in the classified documents, which in some ways is a slam frickin' dunk. It should have gone first. She has slowed it down. The Supreme Court has slowed down January 6th by not ruling on whether, you know, he's got immunity. you know, Fonnie Willis is a whole other complicated thing. So I think the three of us, if we were just sitting around, would say those three cases are much more serious threats to democracy than this particular case. But they got slowed down for other reasons. And this is the case that got up first, and people gave Alan Bragg a lot of shit, and he won the case. So I don't really like to be saying this is the least important case, da-da-da. This is the case that Alan Bragg won, and Donald Trump has been convicted of 34 felonies.
I don't think anybody would dispute that Alvin Bragg did a extremely professional job of prosecuting what many observers beforehand thought was going to be a bit of a stretch. So that's not an issue. I suppose there are two things to me that still seem an issue. One is the small question to some, but you know, to some of us, the thing we think about, which is whether Trump will ever go to jail for any of this. And since he's been convicted of this, it seems worth taking a second, at least, to note that these are Class E felonies. Trump has no previous convictions. And, you know, all other things being equal, and of course, in our current world and where Trump is concerned, all other things are never equal. You wouldn't expect somebody with this on their record to go to jail. That doesn't mean that he may not go to jail for other more serious crimes later. But, you know, in the midst of celebrating that democracy and the justice system has done its job here, it's worth noting that. And I think one of the reasons it's worth noting is because all of these indictments and all of these trials, to me, raise the profound question of unequal justice. And, you know, if the defendant was anybody else than Donald Trump, would any of these trials have taken so long? And if the defendant was anybody else but Donald Trump and they had 34 felony convictions, not just one, but 34, would we all still be saying this person will never serve a night in jail?
Well, I'm not going to say he will never serve a night in jail. He probably will never serve a night in jail, but I think he could still get jail. And I guess the reason that I think it really matters, and I'm not saying you don't think it matters, but the thing that I heard every day of this trial was from some defense attorney who would acknowledge, you know, nonviolent crime, nonviolent criminal, supposedly, no prior record, 77 years old, probably would not get jail time. On the other hand, people would say, if my defendant stood up in front of microphones and trashed the judge and trashed the judge's family and trashed Alvin Bragg and almost threatened people involved with the case, my client would be in jail at least for a night, maybe longer. And so that to me is, I truly hope that the judge, when he has to think about everything that's before him, thinks about how many young Black men, old Black men, brown men, you know, and poor people have been thrown in jail for something lesser than this in terms of contempt. And I hope he adds it to the reasons that Donald Trump should serve some jail time.
So, G, what do you think about the politics of jail in this case?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with Joan and what you said before. Like, I think normally for these felonies, you wouldn't get jail time. I think the fact that, Trump has, and not just Trump, I would add the whole, or almost the whole of the Republican Party has shown contempt for the legal system in a way that's like very bad. And this is like, you know, this is like a major thing that courts have, where like, you know, you're supposed to show respect for the judge. You know, the contempt for the majesty of the court is like a serious thing. But he hasn't been charged for that. And that is the real unequal justice. The fact that they've been allowed, he and all the other politicians that joined him and were railing against the judge and railing against the jury and the and Alvin Bragg. I mean, like, this is a serious problem, and it goes beyond, you know, like Trump. It's an existential problem. How can you have like the rule of law if you have one of the two major political parties showing contempt for it. To me, that's like a political issue, not a legal one. You know, if Trump goes to jail, I think he deserves to go to jail. If he doesn't go to jail, it's because he has that political backing of that party. And then we have to figure out a way to make that a political issue so Republicans pay a price for this.
Like, yeah.
That's the main issue, more than whether Trump himself goes to jail. I will say, on an optimistic side, like, I think if Trump loses the election and then the other cases go forward, I actually do think, as amazing as this sounds, he could end up in jail. Like, I think...
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's because the other cases are more serious, and this was his best shot. And if he lost this one, I think, you know, he will lose some of the other ones, and then it becomes a real that's something for the future. But from now till Election Day, no, I don't think he's going to go to jail. So, you know, what we have now is how things are likely to stand for for most of us, the relevant length of time.
And, you know, in our system of justice, it's innocent until proven guilty. But once you've been convicted, you don't get the presumption of innocence anymore. So we are talking about someone who is a convicted felon when we're talking about the nomination, when we're talking about the election, and when we're talking about Trump's treatment by his fellow supposedly law and order Republicans.
Yeah, that should be his Homeric epithet. Convicted felon, that's Donald it. Trump. If I were the Democratic Party, that's how I would refer to him from now until the day he dies.
But you know, we've got a lot of people committing political malpractice and saying, you know, Joe Biden shouldn't lean into that, and, you know, just leave it with the jury. And I wrote a piece a couple days ago just saying exactly that. It's political malpractice. He is convicted felon Donald Trump. It really rolls off the tongue more easily than disgraced, twice impeached former president Donald Trump, which I always try to get into my stories. But this is who he is. And the Democrats who are acting like, you know, the pearl clutchers are really doing a disservice to the party. And I have to say, you know, Biden himself, I think, has begun to lean into it. At a fundraiser last night, he called him a convicted felon. He doesn't seem to be afraid of it. He doesn't seem, you know, he can do his little bipartisan things, his cowardly things. Let's just leave Gaza aside. But he can also be kind of a brawler. And I think he's really going to enjoy using the term convicted felon, because it just rolls off the tongue. It's so easy.
Well, let's just put it another way. Like if Joe Biden had been a convicted felon, like, do we doubt for a moment that this is not something that every Republican politician would be saying in every speech, and that Fox News and all the other right-wing outlets would be saying, like, on every possible occasion?
Right.
Like, it seems like, as Joan is exactly right, so both political malpractice, but political malpractice rooted in the fact that the Democrats, for complicated reasons, have a leadership that is conflict averse.
This is where we get back to, in a sense, where we began, which is the horse race, and what kind of impact do you think this could have? It seems that before the trial got underway, there was a swath, not a wide swath, but a narrow swath of Trump supporters who said, well, I would happily vote for him if it were today, but if he were convicted of a felony, that would be another story. And as the trial has gone on, that group has narrowed and narrowed so that, you know, according to most recent polls, 1 in 10 Republicans said this would make them less likely to vote for Trump, but 1 in 3 said it would make them more likely, and more than half said it would make no difference.
Yeah, no, it is a very complicated thing. And there's a way in which, if you're an anti-system politician, the fact that, you know, you're going to jail actually makes you stronger. Right. You know, I think one could refer to someone like Marion Barry or, you know, various mayors. You know, I was living in Toronto under Rob Ford, and the fact that there was like video of him smoking crack only increased his popularity. So there's that element. And even during Watergate, there were some Republicans, Stanton Evans, who said, you know, I never liked Nixon until Watergate. So there's a, you know, like the sort of partisan energy that gets mobilized on behalf of them. But I don't think the Republicans are a monolithic group. There are a lot of people. Trump's coalition has always included people who don't like him, who think like, you know, this guy is like, you know, bad news. I don't like the tweets. He's vulgar. He's too crass. He's corrupt. But I hate the Democrats even more. But like that group, I don't think that they can necessarily vote for Joe Biden, but they could stay at home. And I think that this gives them an added reason for staying home. And I think, you know, like the last two elections have been very close, not in the total popular vote, but like if you look at the Electoral College, the last election was like 45,000 votes in 3 states. And 2016 was like 70,000 votes in 3 states. So, I think if this could make enough of a difference with those marginal Republican voters to flip the election. And I think it's absolutely worth encouraging. That is one of the big strategies against Trump, of negative polarization, of just like, you know, reminding people how much they hate him. And I think this case has everything. In addition to like the actual technical narrow reason why he's convicted, it has like every aspect of why people like find Trump an unsavory character.
Yeah, I'm totally with Chief. I mean, we don't know, but I will just not dismiss it, because, you know, there have been a few polls in the last few days, and it's way too early. And maybe his support has dropped a couple points, and maybe the number of people, or the percentage, excuse me, of people saying they won't vote for him because of this has only risen a little bit. But I even think that's interesting, because, you know, the theoretical, if he is convicted, how will you feel? You know, no, none of us can really do that. And now he has been, and the numbers have stayed the same or even gotten worse. And, you know, we'll see what continues to happen. He is popular because he defies all the rules. But I still think that there is a lot of room to continue to push on this. I definitely, and I think you both know this, I don't want the Democrats to abandon their base of young voters, Black voters, voters of color, women voters, to, you know, harp on the independents who might lean Republican but don't like him as their, you know, their saviors. I think they've got to do it all, but there is room to go after those independents and those disaffected Republicans. And I think the number will grow.
But is there? I suppose that's my question is, you know, this verdict presents Democratic strategists with an opportunity, certainly, but also a dilemma. I mean, how much room is there for Biden to chase disaffected Republicans, particularly suburban women who, you know, didn't vote for Trump in 2020, but did vote for him in 2016, or whatever whatever the group is that you think this is going to move the needle on.
Well, I don't.
How can the Democrats go after that group without further alienating their base?
Well, they don't have to alienate their base because that group is extremely motivated by the Dobbs decision and abortion, and by just the general health of democracy. You know, we all know that people can be played against one another, and we still may see that, and we will call it out when we see it. But it doesn't really go without saying, Don. I think you can make a separate play, well, a separate play for those people, but also not a separate play. They really are available on abortion, and they are increasingly available on the criminality of Donald Trump. So I'm just not that worried that this is forcing some existential choice that's going to involve, you know, Democrats abandoning the people we care about, including us, you know.
The question is, do you just, it's how you use this argument. Do you use this argument in a pro-system way, which is a way that, you know, appeals to those suburban Republicans, which is to say, you know, we believe, you know, the justice system is great, America is great, Trump is getting what he deserves, and we, I think that that argument actually does not necessarily play well with a lot of the Democrats who are angry at Joe Biden, who are themselves kind of anti-system, who, you know, like as Semaphore recently reported, see the United States as a dying empire led by bad people. And to those voters, you know, like an argument that, you know, like playing on this to say we have to stand by the existing democracy and system, I don't think that necessarily plays. I think what can play is actually to say, yes, there's a lot of corruption in the system, and Trump is emblematic of it, and he doesn't do what he claims to do, which is use his knowledge of corruption for the benefit of people. He's out for himself. That Trump is this corrupt politician who's always out for himself. This case shows it. And then to try to use, you know, the sort of disenchantment that people have with the existing system to say, like, Trump has been a prime example of someone who his entire life has benefited from the inequality and corruption of the American system. And I think that that argument, you know, might resonate in a more populist way with many of the, you know, Democrats where Biden is kind of hurting right now. You know, there's unfortunately a lot of polls showing real disenchantment with Biden among young people and people of color. And so I think an argument that, like, you know, like highlights that Trump embodies many of the things that those people themselves are very unhappy about in America. I think that's a one way to square this circle.
So by concentrating more on Trump's flaws than on the system's virtues.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do think that, you know, the argument that they make about, well, these guys are defying the rule of law, it's a true argument. And I think that that does appeal to the more centrist suburban people. And you can make it to those people, but that's not the only argument you should be making here. And I think that, you know, part of a coalition is you make, you know, like overlapping arguments to different audiences. And I think for the audience of people that are disenchanted with Biden, I think really drilling down on Trump's corruption and the way that corruption has always been towards, you know, it's very sordid and nasty and for his personal benefit, I think that's a very solid case.
So one last question for both of you, and I'm going to start with you, Joe, which is, what impact, if any, does this have on who Trump might choose as a running mate?
You know, it's just got to be somebody who has doubled down for him, who has just gone to the mat and said, you know, at every turn that, you know, he was abused, he was treated poorly. This is, you know, weaponization of politics and the Department of Justice. So, you know, maybe it helps, like, Elise Stefanik. I often think he will choose a woman. Like, they will get to him and they will say, you know, the other guy's got a woman. There are various men who are standing beside him, but I think he's going to choose a woman, and but she's got to be somebody who's been even more ferocious than he has. You know, he'll never again choose a Mike Pence. I despise Mike Pence. I don't consider him like a moral person, but he did have his own morality that kept him from doing some of the worst things, although he's been defending Trump since this verdict. So I think he needs somebody super loyal, but I also think it's going to be a woman. So that's what I'm thinking about.
G, what do you say?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think with Republicans, you always want a vice president that's so horrible that people don't want to impeach. And you often go to someone who's worse than you are. You know, Nixon went with Agnew. Bush Jr. went with Dick Cheney. Trump himself, by picking Mike Pence, I mean, I think Pence's own unpopularity was a favor. So I actually think that there's a case to be made for picking someone who's like even more criminal than Trump to really double down on the anti-systems politics and say, like, we're the gangsters who can stand up to everything. And it's noticeable that Trump has a real habit of pardoning criminal politicians on both sides of the aisle. Rod Blagojevich, Kwame Kilpatrick, if he sticks with the Republican, Duke Cunningham, Bernard Kerik.
George Santos.
George Santos. Yeah. So you both get the, you know, like someone who's worse than you and therefore terrifies everyone from using the 25th Amendment or impeachment. And then you also get the really emphasizing the fact that we're the party that's standing up against the corrupt deep state.
I like that.
Okay. Well, thank you both. And thank you all for listening to See How They Run.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.